Satan is now questioning Job's motive. Satan suggests that Job's allegiance to God is based upon God's blessing upon Job.
Blessed is the man that walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law does he meditate day and night. Welcome to the Voice of Truth, the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. We believe that all Scripture is profitable to those who open their hearts and minds to hear what the Lord is trying to say. So let's join the congregation and listen in to this message from Pastor J.D.
Would you turn with me in your Bibles to James chapter 5? James chapter 5. Now, did you have more patience last week? Was it better, or did God just test you all week long to see if you got the message? Isn't that what usually happens? You say, oh, Lord, give me patience. You know, never pray that. That's just a mistake. You don't want to pray for patience, because I'm going to tell you, the moment you do, man, God just is like, he pours it on. Yes, we do need patience. James chapter 5, look with me beginning at verse 10. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. The title of this message is The Person of Patience. How many of you have watched the show Candid Camera before? Well, most of you. How many of you have been on Candid Camera? Well, we're going to change that right now. I'm going to ask you to use your imagination for just a moment this morning. Someone has a hidden camera. They've been taking video of you. Now, not when you're at church, not when you're in front of your friends, and not when you're in your very best mood, but someone has secretly made a video of you when you're behind the slow driver who's in the fast lane. They recorded you as you yell, "Move over, idiot!" All right? Someone has recorded you when you're on the internet and it slowed down to a crawl and you're trying to download your favorite movie, you know, and as you're trying to download it, so slow, and you're thinking thoughts of AT&T that are less than Christian. Someone has recorded you at that moment when a crazy driver won't slow down long enough for you to get into the left turn lane, and you flash your lights, you honk your horn, and you just pray that it's not somebody from church. Seriously, suppose that someone videoed you at all of your most impatient moments, and then to your surprise, you're on Candid Camera, and the rest of us get to watch. Oh, how would people remember you? Would they remember you as a person of patience? I thought it sounds like a pretty good idea for a reality TV show, actually. Would they remember you as a person of patience? James has gone back into the archives of time. Back at that time, of course, there were no video. There were, you know, just books. And one of the books, of course, that we have is the book of Job. But there might as well have been video, because God was watching Job at a season in Job's life when his patience was going through the most severe time of testing. It's doubtful that any one of us has ever endured the testing and the trials of Job. But then God recorded the entire episode, and it's available for all to see. And now James is going back. This is the Job's candid camera moment, and he's calling on us to remember Job. And James says, you have heard of the patience of Job. Well, first of all, we see that Job is meant to be an example of patience. Look with me beginning at verse 10. My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Now, what this passage tells us is that there have always been impatient people, just as there are today. Now, I don't know how many of you consider yourselves impatient. I won't take a poll or anything like that, but maybe you say, yes, I'm an impatient person. I struggle with patience. I do believe that we have become more impatient now than at any other time. In fact, our culture is one that encourages impatience. Isn't that true? I read a Boston Globe article with this headline: "Instant gratification is making us perpetually impatient." Read you just a little bit of the article. "The demand for instant results is seeping into every corner of our lives, and not just virtually. Retailers are jumping into same-day delivery services, intent on getting products into our shoppers' doorsteps in just a few hours. Smartphone apps eliminate the wait for a cab, a date, or a table at a hot restaurant. An endless array of movies and TV shows can begin streaming in just seconds. But experts caution that all the instant gratification is coming with a price. It's making us less patient." Now, this has been going on for a long time. Now, again, I'm going to call on you to use your imagination for just a moment. We're going to take a trip back in time. We're going back 150 years. It is now the year 1864. It's 2 a.m. in the morning, and suddenly you wake up with an insatiable craving for popcorn. You reach over to turn on your lamp next to your bed. You're fumbling around for the light switch, but wait a minute. This is 1864. The light switch wasn't invented until 1884. And so finally, you find a match. You light your kerosene lantern, and now you at least have some light. You stumble into the kitchen, and you're sure that you bought popcorn last time you went to the store. But wait a minute. This is 1864, and HEB hadn't been invented yet. But did you know that popcorn was actually one of the favorite snacks back in the 1800s? I learned that little piece of trivia this past week. However, the popcorn machine hadn't been invented until 1884, and so you had to make your own. Well, that's no problem. You happen to have some dried corn, and you're ready to pop them babies into the microwave. But wait a minute. This is 1864. The microwave wasn't invented until 1945. But at least you have a stove, and you look for the knob to turn on the gas. Oh, but wait a minute. This is 1864. Did you know the gas stove wasn't available until 1880? Well, you're just going to have to haul in some wood into the house. So you get up, you heat up your cast iron stove. Now it's 4:30 a.m., and finally, you have your popcorn. Now, some of you are looking at me like, where is this going? Well, my question is simply this. How many of you living now in the 21st century would have the patience to pop up a bag of popcorn back in 1864? Not very many of us. You see, the truth is, we have all become conditioned to convenience. We are so used to instant gratification. It's true, you know, I used to go to Blockbuster Video for a family movie, but you know, now that takes too long. And I'm so thankful for Netflix, you know, I mean, it's just the things we have become used to. Instant gratification. And we have less patience maybe than at any other time, but let's look at what we studied last week, just momentarily. James writing in chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, he said, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces" what? That's the intended goal. Produces patience. "But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete and lacking nothing." Now remember our definition for patience from last week. The quality of being patient as the bearing of provocation, annoyance, misfortune, or pain without complaint, loss of temper, irritation, or the like. Well, the Greek word, hupomone. My Strong's dictionary defines this word as cheerful or hopeful endurance. That means that whatever it is that you are going through, there is an element of hope to your endurance. But let patience have its perfect work, and we discover that the work involves trials. The work involves pain. The work of God in our patience often involves suffering. And listen, that's where Job comes in. James points back to all the Old Testament prophets. They all suffered. Look at verse 10. "My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Now, there's one in particular, of course, I think that rises above all the rest, and of course that is Job. We've looked at the Old Testament prophets. No one suffered like Job. Why is Job such a great example of patience and endurance? Well, one reason is that so much detail is given to us about the exact circumstances of Job's trials. Job has an entire Old Testament book devoted just to him. But I think something else that stands out about Job's trials is this. We learn from the book of Job what is going on behind the scenes in heaven. There is nothing else like it in the Bible. In Job, we hear the actual dialogue. We hear the conversation, what the devil and God are talking about behind in the heavenly scene. Listen together as we look at this conversation between the devil and God. It's quite interesting. If you look at Job chapter 1, verse 6, it says, "Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, 'From where do you come?' And so Satan answered the Lord and said, 'From going to and fro on the earth and from walking back and forth on it.' And then the Lord said to Satan, 'Have you considered my servant Job? Have you considered my servant Job?'" This is not the only place in the Bible where you have such a conversation, but God here is inviting Satan now to consider Job. "Satan, have you thought about my servant Job? Have you considered this righteous man? Have you thought about tempting him to sin? Satan, have you considered my servant Job?" You discover in this passage that Satan often likes to go for the low-hanging fruit, so to speak, and he didn't think of Job as an easy take. If you look at verse 9 of chapter 1 of Job, "So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? Have you blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land?' Thus far, Satan had left Job alone. Satan assumed that Job was really just kind of a goody-goody and a personal favorite of God's. It's like teacher's pet. Nobody's going to bother Job. God, you're not going to bother Job. You're not going to cause Job to go through pain and suffering. And Satan assumed that Job, just a favorite of God, he assumed that Job would not fall easy. And Satan insinuates that Job's faithfulness to God was due to the benefits and the blessings that God had heaped upon Job. And so now Satan challenges God. Look at verse 11 of Job chapter 1. "But now," this is Satan speaking, "stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." Satan is now questioning Job's motive. Satan suggests that Job's allegiance to God is based upon God's blessing upon Job. "Take it all away, God. Take away everything that Job has, and I guarantee you, God, he's going to curse you to your face." Here we discover an important principle that we should never forget. God gives Satan limited permission. God gives Satan limited permission. The key word here is limited. Charles Spurgeon often refers to Satan as the dog of hell on God's leash. The dog of hell on God's leash. Look at verse 12 of chapter 1 of Job. "And the Lord said to Satan, 'Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person.' And so Satan went out from the presence of the Lord." Now, this is not, again, the only place where we see God giving Satan permission. Jesus told Peter, he said, "Peter, Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat." The Apostle Paul was buffeted by a messenger sent from Satan, and three times Paul pleaded with God to remove that satanic thorn in the flesh, and you know the story of how God just refused. God refused Paul's request, but you will notice, as you read each account, that every time Satan is granted permission, it's for a divine purpose. God never allows Satan to touch you unless God intends to use your trial for your own good, and every permission that Satan has granted is limited. This is where we can always fall back, I believe, on just the great promises of God. You know, Romans 8:28. Maybe it's one of your favorite verses. It sure is one of mine. I go there all the time. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to His purpose. And so Job is the greatest example that we have of a man who patiently endured. And James writes, he said, you have these examples. You have this example, Job. But number two, in Job, we see the endurance of patience. Look at verse 11. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. We count them blessed who endure. Now remember that the Greek word for patience means hopeful endurance. But to endure in the Greek is actually the root of the word patience. Patience is hupomone, endure is hupomeno. And it means to bear under or to carry a load. It means that you must keep going. You've heard the expression, keep on, keeping on. That's really what it's talking about. It's just that endurance. You just keep on, you keep on, and you keep on. But it's not just keeping on in sadness. It's not keeping on in despair. It is continuing on with an attitude of hope in God. And Job endured everything that Satan threw at him, and he never gave up hope in God. What did Job endure? Well, if you're looking at Job chapter 1, and you're going back and forth here, I realize that. But Job chapter 1, verses 13 through 19, I'm going to read it to you. Let's look at what Job endured. Now, there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them. When the Sabaeans raided them and took them away, indeed they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came to him and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them. And I alone have escaped to tell you. And while he was still speaking, another also came in and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands. They raided the camels. They took them away. Yes, and they killed the servants with the edge of the sword. And I alone, only I have escaped to tell you. While he was yet speaking, another also came in and said, your sons, your daughters, they were eating and drinking wine in the oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people. They're all dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you. I think sometimes we forget this is a real story. And Job is a real man, and this really happened. And Job was a man who had a beautiful family. He had many sons. He had daughters. He had great wealth. He had servants. He had cattle. He had donkeys. He had camels, sheep. And within the space of a few moments, everything that Job owned was wiped out. I believe worst of all, though, was Job's entire family. All of his sons, all of his daughters killed instantly when the house that they were in collapsed when struck by a great wind. I read about the stock market crash of 1929. And there were just countless investors who lost entire fortunes in just moments. Historian William K. Klingemann says asphyxiation by gas was the most common method of doing oneself in, as many people just gave up on life. And he writes, the wife of a Long Island broker shot herself in the heart. A utilities executive in Rochester, New York, shut himself in his bathroom and opened a wall jet of illuminating gas. A St. Louis broker swallowed poison. A Philadelphia financier shot himself in his athletic club. A divorcee in Allentown, Pennsylvania, closed the doors and windows of her home and turned on a gas oven. In Milwaukee, one gentleman who took his own life left a note that read, my body should go to science, my soul to Andrew W. Mellon, and sympathy to my creditors. I do believe it's safe for us to assume that none of us have endured the trials of Job. None of us have gone through what Job went through. Yes, we lose our jobs. Yes, we have accidents. Yes, we suffer financial loss. We lose our loved ones. But Job lost it all. And just in moments, and the reason that Job is such a great example is that Job endured and Job never lost hope in God. And you see that in verse 20 of Job chapter 1. Then Job arose and he tore his robe, he shaved his head, and he fell to the ground. And this man Job worshiped. He worshiped God. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. Blessed be the name of the Lord." In all this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. Now remember, Job's a real man. He had a real family. He had real wealth. And he lost it all. But at that moment, he blessed God. He worshiped God. He exalted God. You'd think that would be enough, wouldn't you? Job still endured more. Satan again went before God and challenged God again. And he said in Job chapter 2, verse 4, "So Satan answered the Lord and said, 'Skin for skin, yes, all that a man has, he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face.'" And God said basically to Satan, he said, "Okay, Satan, go at it. Only do this. Just spare his life. Don't take his life. You can do whatever you want to do to Job physically, but don't take his life." And so Satan went out from the presence of the Lord, it says in verse 7 of chapter 2, and he struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself. That's basically just a piece of pottery. And he sat in the midst of ashes, and he just began to scrape his body. This was a man in utter misery, being tortured by these painful boils. If that wasn't enough, listen to what his wife says in verse 9. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Just curse God and die." What a man of patience and endurance Job was. He had lost everything that he owned. His family had been wiped out. He was in physical torment. His wife was telling him to just curse God and die. But in verse 10, again, look at what Job said. But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God? And shall we not accept adversity?" And in all this, Job did not sin with his lips. It's not over with for Job. Job still endures more. You know, you would think during your most difficult times, at least you have your friends. Not always. We all know what fair weather friends are, don't we? Fair weather friends. His friends concluded that Job must be guilty of something horrendously evil, and they assumed that all the trials that Job was going through was punishment from God. "Job, what have you done? Job, what is it that you did to incur these trials and these painful circumstances?" And you know, they just pointed the finger at Job and said, "Job, it must be you. You've wronged God." In fact, the remainder of this book is really a dialogue between Job and his fair weather friends. And at a time when Job needed encouragement, at a time when Job needed friendship, at a time when Job needed support from his wife, at a time when he had lost everything, all turned against Job. Still, Job endured. He never lost hope in God. He never once complained. He never turned against God. He never blamed God. Do you know why people leave the church so often? I'll tell you, it's really simple.
You have been listening to The Voice of Truth with Pastor J.D. Glasscock of Calvary Chapel, Houston Metro. For a copy of today's message, call 281-499-6301. That's 281-499-6301. And mention today's date, or you can visit our website at calvary.cc. That's calvary.cc. Calvary Chapel meets for worship services every Sunday morning at 9:30 at 7711 Brazewood Boulevard in Houston, Texas. We also have a midweek Bible study Wednesday evenings at 7. Thank you for listening, and we hope you will join us again for the next broadcast of The Voice of Truth.